All right, welcome back. So tonight I'd like to just do a recap from last week's talk of talk exploring this habits and patterns, this new link or this new part of this this Dharma in daily life. And particularly wanted to look at the unconscious habits, habits of that show up as actions, and how those can be actually entry point into the Dharma, into our practice, because these are often the ones that perpetuate and maintain our suffering. So we're setting aside intentionally those habits which support us, that really help us deepen in our practice or help us with our well-being or our professional lives. But look more at some of those neurotic habits, those habits which seem to be just keep generating our own distress and suffering in our lives. Now, we as a culture really focus on habits. You just do a search on habits, and there's internet shows you all the five worst habits to fix and the 10 new habits to create in whatever area you might be looking at. So we really key on this idea of habits. And as Dharma practitioners, this is an interesting point in our discernment, because we can easily go into the normal cultural relationship to, let's say, habits which aren't so helpful. And that is of self-improvement, that I'm going to make myself a better person. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, as long as it's done consciously, as long as we're intending to work on some aspect of ourselves and how we relate to others or how we do a particular task. The problem is when we start to take that self-improvement as the ultimate thing we're trying to do, that we're trying to improve ourselves, and that's the ultimate aim, the ultimate goal, is to make ourselves a better person. Again, there's a relative benefit and helpfulness to that, and there's also this trap, this kind of dead end that we can fall into as Dharma practitioners as we try to make ourselves better Dharma practitioners without ever understanding or investigating that sense of self, this underlying premise of I, of me, and mine. So this difference between self-improvement versus understanding the self. What am I really, what is this assumption of me? Look out and I see other things, and I'm the one who's seeing it. I'm the ones who's sensing or feeling or thinking. And we start to become curious as our practice deepens and matures. And there's a famous quote from our Zen brothers and sisters from Dogen, who's the patriarch of Zen. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the body and mind of others, drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this trace continues endlessly. Okay, this is a very profound and deep statement. To study the self is our practice. And to study the self, we learn to actually forget the self. And this is a helpful thing to keep remembering. Why am I practicing? And even more importantly, how am I practicing? Am I practicing from this background assumption that I need to improve something about myself? Again, there's a place for that. There's a place for making ourselves healthier, mentally, physically, emotionally, allowing us to be more productive in our lives. This is the positive aspects of habit and patterns. And there's also this whole other aspect, which is when we get caught in that, I need to improve this me who's actually empty. So tonight I'd like to explore these habits and patterns as a way of understanding the self, to understand and study the self. Again, particularly these unconscious patterns that keep us tied to suffering, and how we can see through our how we act in our in the world, how we the patterns we do actually show us something that's unconscious, that's harder to see. Because our habits and patterns don't lie. We may have this belief or this kind of value that I am in this certain way, but how we actually act, how we actually show up doesn't deceive. It doesn't lie. It actually shows the deeper intentionality. And remember that action is not just what we do with our bodies or our words. It's also what we do with our minds. It's also how we think. Okay, so that's always a sobering thing to recall, that it's not just how I act, but it's physically, it's how I actually think and can cognize is as much as an action as anything else. So this unconscious quality that often drives us, I used this analogy last week from the science fiction world, that there's this kind of man on this planet with him and his daughter, and these space visitors come, these astronauts. And the man seems like he's a little arrogant, but he's also mostly helpful. But he has this whole unconscious quality that shows up, is manifested as this creature, this invisible creature. This is from the 1956 Forbidden Planet. And so this creature goes around causing lots of devastation and killing people and all this stuff that happens, but it's all invisible. But you can feel, you can actually see its footprints. There's this beautiful or striking scene of these footprints kind of just suddenly appearing in the surface of this planet as this invisible creature moves along. And that sense of the invisible footprints that we leave behind shows us the analogy is with our actions, our patterns. We may find ourselves in the midst of a pattern, and right there's something invisible that's moving us. Its primary is really self-knowledge, is understanding the nature of suffering. You know, what causes suffering to arise and what causes it to cease, to fall away. And an essential aspect or step to this is how we view our patterns. Okay, so usually we view them with an eye to get rid of them, to fix them, to overcome them, or to cultivate the ones which are good. This is on the spectrum of self-improvement. Again, has its place. From the Dharma standpoint, it's really that quality of preference, of wanting things to be a certain way, that sense of aversion and craving, that actually starts to change the very way we see something. Because if we see something in order to get rid of it, what's our relationship to it going to be like? If we see something in order to keep it, to make it last longer, we have a different relationship to it. Both have this embedded, unconscious relationship of clinging, to use dependent origination's phrase, that clinging, that relationship of stickiness. Another way to say it is that relationship means we're generating this sense of self, this sense of me, in relationship to it. That's why I wanted to share that meditation that we did last Tuesday morning in the drop-in sit of letting go. Because that can be such a helpful thing as something arises, just physically, the breath, a sound, a sensation, a sense of letting go. And that starts to teach us that letting go of the whole display of a mind, of thoughts, of emotions. And even deeper, those qualities of relationship, of holding, of clinging, of wanting and not wanting, starting to release those. Again, this is a moment by moment practice. I'm not talking about these bigger things in our life that we want to, be successful. We want to be comfortable. We want to have good health. That's kind of more of a wholesome want. This is more this unconscious relationship that keeps us bound. Again, we're talking from the Dharma seat, the Dharma exploration. This is what binds us to suffering. And so the very practical way is that when we meditate is we start to clean up this inherent judgment. Okay, so what I mean is when something arises, let's say there's a breath, and I say, okay, that's a good breath or that's a bad breath. That's a good sensation or a bad sensation. A good meditation or a bad meditation. We like to kind of put everything into these dualistic camps, the ones we like and the ones we don't like. So that's why we emphasize so much this non-judgmental awareness, the awareness that doesn't have an agenda, that's not trying to move something one way or the other, but to actually, in this moment, to see life how it actually is, to see life how it actually is, not through our preconceptions, not through our judgment. This is embedded in like the third noble, the four foundations of mindfulness, the third foundation of awareness of the mind. That the Buddha talks about, notice when the mind is concentrated, when it's collected. Notice when it's distracted and diffuse. And there's nowhere in there where he says, and one is better than the other. He's calling and asking us to step back into this, really the true quality of mindfulness, the true quality of awareness itself that sees beyond our normal preferences. This allows life to be seen directly and fully, instead of having to be always filtered through our wanting and not wanting. So this is such an important thing to bring into, when we are looking at habits and patterns. Because we see a habit that we judge as bad, we see that, oh, I'm doing that same habit again, we already are set up ourselves fighting with it. Okay, so we can go into the self-improvement and try to overcome it. But that's not the Dharma practice. Practice is really learning to understand. And through the understanding, then things let go of us. They release naturally, if that's what happens. So noticing when a pattern arises, to pause, to say, okay, what's actually here? To actually meet it with a quality of compassion, a quality of turning toward it. What is it here? What is it like? What's the belief that may be behind it? And we can look at kind of these three kaleshas, these three underlying unwholesome roots of greed, of hatred, and delusion, and how they often are part of these patterns. If we can kind of step back and see, oh, this is a pattern that's generated through wanting, through longing, through greed, a lack, a sense of insufficiency. Or perhaps it's a pattern or a habit that's generated by the sense of hatred, of not wanting, of dislike, of fear, of disallowing this experience. Or perhaps it's a pattern that allows us to check out, to become disassociated, to become distracted, of greed, of hatred, and delusion. So these patterns we can sometimes notice more clearly when we're in the midst of it. We wake up to that and see, okay, this is what's happening. My hand's reaching out. I'm acting this pattern out. Sometimes we have to reflect after the fact and say, okay, what was happening? What was there? Sometimes we don't wake up to these because they're so unconscious until life provides its rub. When people say, you know, that email you sent was a little upsetting, or the what you said there on that Zoom call, or, you know, your relationships are constantly giving you that feedback. It's like, okay, when are you in conflict? When are you in friction? Really, when are those habits and patterns showing up? And this is also an important trick or knack, let's say, of making daily life a spiritual practice, is to actually use those rubs, that feedback from life, not as something to get over, but actually say, thank you. Thank you for this gift, a chance to turn toward, to understand more clearly what is here. It's hard because it often means we have to look at some of the deeper pain of our bodies, pain of our hearts. You know, this, seeing these underlying roots of greed and hatred and delusion. So it's a courageous practice. It's a humble practice. And there's a willingness to release our position, to release our sense of me being a certain way, and just to relax and see what is here, to hear the feedback. So these three patterns or these three qualities of greed and hatred and delusion. You might notice when we act from a quality, like I was shared last week, of having a just a simple interaction with my family, with my wife and daughter, and feeling like, okay, I've had enough of whatever we're doing, so I'm just going to abruptly get up and leave. And I'm just, feel like I'm taking care of myself, but I'm not realizing that pattern is discounting our relationship, discounting how that causes their pain. And they lovingly spoke up and told me. And so I was able to reflect on that. There's this unconscious pattern. Okay, I've had enough. I'm just going to leave without acknowledging the relationship. And see how, again, that rub of life, of relationships, show us these deeper patterns. Or perhaps of greed. We all kind of often have our natural tendencies. Like when you go into a store or you're browsing on the internet, and where do your eyes like to go? What do you find interesting? That's often, if you step back, you notice, oh, there's something I'm seeking. There's like a hunger, a unquenchable thirst I'm just trying to fulfill in some way. And how we can browse in the internet again and again, never, from hours and hours sometimes. And wherever we catch it, we just pause for a second and notice that momentum of wanting and maybe the underlying lack which is driving it. And then maybe delusion, that sense of being confused, of unsure, of spaced out, and how sometimes when conflict arises, maybe we go into that pattern of disconnecting, of losing our contact. Or perhaps you kind of were working on some task and we kind of suddenly find ourselves seeking something more pleasant. And there's that uncomfortableness goes into delusion, which then leads into craving, wanting. So these three roots really function together. So the invitation last week is just to start to step back and pause again, notice our patterns, and say, okay, well, I'm going to wake up into the pattern. Again, with not judging ourselves, without being harsh to ourselves, but really sincerely observing and starting to notice, oh, here's these deeper roots that start to come forth, these roots of greed, of hatred, and delusion. And to pause, to bring that quality of pause, of slowing down, to observe, okay, what's here? So using those rubs or using that, whatever you might be inquiring into, often suffering catches our attention. Sometimes we ask, how do I keep meditating after a retreat? We don't have the same structure. But what we do have is lots of things that are irritating and disappointing and frustrating in our lives. And each one of those can be, if we use it correctly, a way of learning about ourselves. Again, not in a sense of heaviness, of overwhelm, but just noticing, oh, how can I see that this feedback of friction, of resistance is actually showing my underlying relationship? And habits and patterns are just this kind of, what do you call it? I was trying to say habit and pattern, but it's this pattern that's kind of been ingrained in us, that's somehow worked at some point in our lives. And these habits, if you start to catch them when they first start, they're often inclined by the mind. There's a direction, a thought that arises, or a concept, an attitude, and then our whole bodies follow behind it. As the Dhammapada, the verses of the Buddha, the first one actually, that the mind precedes all mental states. The mind is their chief. They are all mind wrought. So if we act from an impure mind, then a person speaks or acts, suffering follows them like the wheel that follows the foot of the ox. And then conversely, the mind precedes all mental states. The mind is their chief. They are all mind wrought. And with that pure mind, a person speaks or acts, happiness follows like their never departing shadow. So our habits, our patterns, these unconscious qualities, often we don't wake up to the initial thought that moves them. To use a more modern rephrasing of this, the thought manifests as the word manifests as the deed develops into habit, and the habit hardens into character. So watch the thought in its way with care. and let it spring from love, born of concern for all beings. All right. Let's just sit quietly for a few moments, letting those words settle. All right, thank you for your kind attention. Now we're going to move into some small group discussions. So again, these are optional. If you prefer to just sit back in the main group here, then you can just not join the group. And then in 20 minutes, we'll come back about 8:30 and have a chance for a larger group question and answers. And those are often very insightful and interesting to see, you know, how different people are working with these questions. And the small groups are a chance to really express your own understanding. You know, how do I see these? You know, express them from a really honest and humble place, not like as being better than or less than, but just how am I seeing this show up in my life? And everyone in the group will practice this confidentiality, just keeping things held in the group, within the group, and also refraining from advice giving. Refraining from suggestions, or even just, you know, even counter questions, just maybe a clarifying question if that's what's helpful. But for the most part, just practicing listening deeply and then speaking from your heart. So we'll use the homework from last week. So focusing on these unconscious habits and patterns, and just a dialogue of what ones you've noticed and maybe what tends to trigger them, but also what you've noticed, what you've learned about how they have these deeper roots, how this pattern might actually be an expression of greed, of hatred, or delusion. You see, and what have you learned around that? Go ahead, Jackie.
Giving the short talk before this, you seem to indicate that the thought comes before action on a habit. And when I've been thinking of and looking at habits this week, it seemed that feelings would come first for me, with maybe thought overlying the feeling afterwards, where I would, you know, try and make sense of the feeling, and then action would come from that. So, yeah, I was wondering about that.
Well, I guess we'll need to explore what do you mean by emotion versus thought.
The feeling would be the two habits I was thinking of. One was a habit of anxiety and worry. The other was a habit of being reactive to someone else's moods. But they both seem to start with somatic feelings, feeling in the pit of my stomach, you know, kind of feelings of dread or hot feelings of anger, and on top of that would be overlaid. Oh, I guess I'm worried about this, or I think I'm angry about that, and that's why I'm angry in this moment.
Yes. Yeah, so after you have that initial kind of somatic felt sense, then the thoughts are kind of come in to define that more.
Yes.
And so the thought in that case that started this whole process was probably, it's a very subtle quality. Like think back to last year's exploration of the dependent origination and name and form. It was like your consciousness was kind of primed and ready. And something, you know, something came into your awareness. You know, it could have been a person, could be a emotion, a thought, an image, whatever it might be. And the first thing you register is that sense of that felt sense, that grip in the stomach, that tightening. But again, this is, you know, sometimes it's not always helpful or necessary to go down and dissect it to that very first moment. But basically, we can look at thought as being simply that. Sorry, I get distracted because sometimes people turn on or off their videos and suddenly the person I'm talking to vanishes or I lose track of where they are. It's like, what happened? The part of the Zoom thing where, okay, well, just Oh, there you are, Jackie. You just got closer. So what I was saying is that sometimes a thought can be really subtle or almost, you know, seem like it's not even a verbal thought, but it's almost more of this impression that kind of set us up. So it's like some interpretation that you heard, saw, felt something. And even though it's not like maybe not a verbal thought, there's still this shaping of consciousness. So that's kind of what I meant by thought in a very, you know, kind of this precursor, mm-hmm. as opposed to like, I can label this and, you know, write out what it is. That definitely comes later for the most part, but it's kind of that first reaction, you know, like kind of simplify it down to watching my dog's afraid of firecrackers and lightning. So he hears the sound, you know, and there's the recognition of the sound, and the reaction is almost instantaneous, but there's the sound and there's that, what that sound signifies. So it can happen so quickly. And again, as often in daily life, we're not going to be able to catch it at that level. It often takes the momentum of concentration, of a steadiness of attention that's often cultivated on retreat to see that very first impulse arise. And you often still miss a lot of them. But it doesn't matter. You can still catch it in the midst of that. It's like, oh, wow, I felt this. The first thing I was aware of was the body sense of that contraction. Mm-hmm. And then you can notice how the whole story becomes more elaborate around it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes. Even the thing about the dog, because, you know, the dog, then in the dog's mind, something terrible is going on. You know, so first is the thought of the firecracker, then the somatic feeling that the dog's upset, and then the dog thinks, this is a bad thing. I need to hide under the couch. So I get that. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We can react really quickly. We can act, you know, it's like that's a hopeful survival thing. We hear something scary and before we know it, we're already moving. Mm-hmm. But again, there's that subtle name and form that's recognizing and something's dangerous in this case, and we're moving away from it.
Thanks.
You're welcome. All right, Iris, go ahead.
Thank you. In our group, can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're fine.
Great. In our group, as some folks were talking, there was an acknowledgement referencing what you had said about we notice habits and maybe we're uncomfortable with them, but to not immediately try and change things, but rather to acknowledge, like, maybe no preference here. Maybe I just need to, like, chill a bit and sit with this and try to understand it. And it's so helpful because, you know, for myself, when I see something that I don't like, you know, I want to change it. And
right.
You know, that pushing or pulling, you know, will not be helpful. It I think will stop the understanding process and the opening and holding and the compassion and all that.
So, yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's that, again, it's very natural to see something that's painful or hurtful. We want to get rid of it. We want to fix it. And yet if we can able to pause and just kind of let it, it's almost like we're like our car is going a certain direction and we take our foot off the gas. We still kind of perceive the direction it's going, assuming it's not about to crash into something, right? If it's going to crash, we put the brake on. So same thing with a pattern. As long as it's not about to cause harm, real harm to ourselves or someone else, we can almost see it kind of dry firing, if you will. It's like it's going that momentum like that. You know, I've just had my 10th cookie and I'm reaching again. It's like, let me see, you know, let me reach that and notice that. As soon as my judgment mind comes in, everything kind of like all the shy parts of it, all the unconscious parts go back under unconscious. They get hidden again. And so and if you're able to say just that sense of acknowledgement, okay, this is what the mind is doing. It starts to lighten it up, and paradoxically, it actually allows you to start to release the habit in a much more deep way, because you're actually seeing it, the deeper roots, which when we judge habit, we don't see those deeper roots. Mm-hmm. And judgment is actually a more deeper habit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think maybe next week I might talk more about the mental habits and patterns. You know, tonight, focusing more on the kind of the physical stuff, but those mental habits, that's even more to like what Jackie was talking about, how that preceding, that really precedes that. And with those subtle qualities of habit that kind of almost shape, we just apply it to different areas, right? And that's one thing that's once you see it, it's kind of a little disconcerting, but also it's encouraging at the same time, because if I understand that, then I actually start to change a lot of aspects in my life.
Thank you.
Thank you, Iris. All right, I also would like to share anything. Anybody see anything surprising about looking at habits? Something that you didn't realize?
I can talk about something that the conversation just had me thinking about. And that is that I can have such aversion to speaking in public. Like this, and just when I'm in meetings or something or in a social situation, and afterwards I'm thinking, what did I say? What did I say that for? And I'm judging myself, and I realize that if I just let it go, and which is hard to do, but if I just let time pass, it's all okay, you know? But when I get into that spiral of judging myself and I can't get out of that aversion, it just keeps on keeping on, you know? And it's really challenging to live that way. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad I've realized just if I can just let it go and just realize that it's all going to be okay. I don't believe that I'm okay, and that in other words, it takes time before I get out of that. And I know that it'll pass, but anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Melissa. It's like there's an urgency that these habits often have, these, like we have to take care of it right now. And also your sharing also points to how we relate to these patterns of mind really get tied to how much we were perpetuating our suffering or not. You know, that sense of letting time pass, that sense of pausing, of observing without re-engaging, without really adding to, you know, how that starts to release it. Versus when we see that pattern and we're like, oh my goodness, if we're in the midst of it, I'm judging myself. Why did I say that? And we just kind of rehearse it and we can just become tighter and tighter around it. And that, of course, that really reinforces that whole habit. And also, you also spoke about just like something like speaking in public and how there's that, you know, that nervousness or shyness around it. And every time that you risk that, you're also going against a deeper held pattern. And you can start to see how just what you've shared, if you go back to that quote by Dogen about understanding the self, to study the self is to understand the self, you start to see how, you know, and I can relate to not wanting to talk in public, that's a shyness or not wanting to share. That's a really kind of hardened quality of self. And it has all these patterns which are kind of built up around it to support it and maintain it and protect it, right? And to go against that, again, gets all those patterns start to scream at you. It's like, no, if you talk, people are going to judge you and you're going to say the wrong thing. And you can go back into that pattern, which is really re-hardening reinforcing that belief in self, right? That's that really unconscious footprint, that unconscious belief. And so often when we're willing to kind of test that, to kind of risk it, to say, okay, and you have to use discernment. It's not like, you know, we're going to see how play chicken with the train or something. It's like, you know, I'm going to speak in front of a bunch of friends or colleagues or Sangha members. It's really a relatively low risk situation. But that, you know, internally, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like it's a huge risk. And to actually have the courage to do that starts to undercut that foundation of self by undercutting that pattern. And then the same thing when we go into that judgment quality, we have the choice of reinforcing that pattern or starting to undercut it. It's like, okay, there's my mind rehashing, going through that. And if you just start to observe it, you're in a very profound way starting to loosen that. And over time, you start to find that those patterns that used to always assert themselves don't. And it's not because you said, okay, I'm going to improve myself. It's because you're understanding the sense of self more. And it's becoming more and more fluid. And then it just arises when it needs to, and it's released when it needs to. And there's a way of relating to life which is much more spontaneous and really free. We're not locked in those patterns. So thank you for having the courage to share that.
Thank you.
All right. Looks like who's next here?
Kathy wants to speak, Tim.
I'll go.
All right, Kathy, go ahead. Yeah, my participant list was hiding everything. Tech support, I couldn't quite get to your name. Like, okay.
You were looking elsewhere.
yes, go ahead, Kathy.
You were saying a really helpful thing about thoughts and how they reinforce this. I have been more aware lately that it's the story about my whatever I did that I don't like, or, you know, whatever nervous habit I have or something. It's the mental, it's the words around it. It's sort of the same thing Melissa just said, but it's the words around it that circulate and keep seeming to breathe life into it.
Mm.
And I've found sometimes I'm able to see that, but then I'm not sure if I just want to put a lid on it or what. I'm not sure of the next step in letting that go with kindness, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, definitely. You know, I think next talk, we will talk more about mental patterns. And I think this is a natural kind of deepening of this topic, but it's like, you know, how do you work with those repetitive patterns of mental self-talk, of dialogue? Because, you know, what we can say, okay, what doesn't usually work is when we judge those patterns and we just get tight about it. Because that just creates it's another pattern. We just kind of jump back to another pattern that's doing this pattern upon itself. This habit of mine is, you know, attacked by another habit. So we have these habits kind of beating up each other. And we're kind of just caught in this mass of suffering. So that doesn't work. You know, on the one hand, and another way of looking at it is, okay, can I, ultimately what we're trying to do is be able to see it so clearly that we see it as empty. Okay, so that's kind of the overarching intention. How to get there kind of varies on the pattern and, you know, our relationship to it and a lot of different factors. So sometimes the gateway is really through compassion. Is to say, okay, there's pain here. You know, say, okay, first noble truth, there is dukkha, there is suffering here. And so you move from the mind into the kind of the heart that holds without agenda, without flinching. It's like, okay, let me turn toward and care that there is suffering here. Sometimes that helps us to see it more clearly. Sometimes it's the tool of investigation that we say, okay, what exactly am I believing? What precisely am I believing? And does that make any kind of sense? you know, maybe it made sense when I was 2 years old, but it doesn't make sense when I'm whatever age I am now. Sometimes that kind of clarity, sometimes that quality of letting go is like, okay, this pattern arises and there's a sense of letting it go, of releasing. And sometimes the precision of what I'm releasing exactly is what's needed. Like I can try to release the superficialness and it just keeps going. With compassion, I can feel the deeper quality that, okay, touch on that. And when that releases, then there's a deeper seeing. And sometimes there is more of that just saying no. Okay, this pattern is just leads to more suffering. And there's more of that quality of almost firmness of like saying, no, I'm not going to add one more thought to this. And so it's, you know, it does for my own experience. It's like all the ones I just named, I use and I try, and you just kind of see until something shifts. It's like, oh, I'm relating to this in a different way. And that way that you were looking for is that we start to relate to it in a way that leads to softening of it, of releasing the deeply held beliefs around it, seeing that and underneath it's inherently empty. And sometimes we just, we need to have some space around it, some sense of not being so charged by it. And so it's an interesting journey, and it's a process. Thank you, Kathy. All right, perhaps one more if there is any out there. We have some announcements.
Beth Sobel wants to talk.
Beth, go ahead.
I was just remembering part of the conversation that we had in our quartet, was it? quintet around judging, and I'll just say that I've discovered, partly from personal biography, and I don't think I'm alone, that there is a belief, a very deep belief system in this mind that really is convinced that there is something very wrong with this moment. Mm. And it's my job to fix it. Mm. And so we were talking about some of the strategies. One of the strategies I've tried to employ is the non-doing, you know, just sort of, it's related to the pause. It's related to, and I've actually, different times I've actually gone through my contact list and looked at each name of my person in my life and asked, what's wrong with this person? Hmm. What's wrong with knowing this person? Just trying to, I shared with the group that I had this image of turning a mirror around and looking at myself and just like trying to pause that way by just like turning onto myself in a way and saying, you know, trying to face the reality of this. Is this testing the truthfulness of it? Mm. I've gone through rooms in my house, you know, the obsession with another pillow on the couch kind of thing, that there's something wrong with the couch without the pillow sort of idea.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes, that sounds like some really, you know, great ways to kind of get into these patterns and to explore them. And sometimes, you know, to be honest, we just have to keep trying until there's something that finally you finally actually stop trying to fix things. And sometimes we just have to see, okay, there is, I'm fixing it. I'm trying to negotiate. I'm trying to convince myself not to fix it. And then something shifts that we actually don't try to fix this moment. And in its place, something else rushes in. There's this, something is fundamentally missing, but it's not like in a bad way. It's like, oh, this burden, this inherent friction I've always had. And really what's happened is there's this part of that sense of self that's so dependent upon always being the fixer, being the one who knows, that has relaxed, that has softened in a way. And there's a peace in that. There's an ease in that. And you might also, Beth, notice the ways where that naturally arises. You know, that like you can probably, like, even where you, wherever you are right now, looking in your room, there's parts of your environment which you look at and there's nothing arises. Like, it may be just kind of a neutral thing. Like, you don't really have an opinion like that's good or bad. But notice how underneath that, there's a different relationship to that, that experience, that seeing or that object. And that's simply of peace, of allowance.
That would be good to try. Thank you.
You're welcome. And just one more final thing about that. Of course, the external, internal start to, we have to also turn that toward ourselves. Yeah. Is to allow ourselves to be just how we are deeply. Yeah. It's a journey. And I think we'll explore that, I think, next week. An important pattern of mind that so many of us have. Thank you, Beth, and thank you all for your sharing. So before we have announcements, let's just say a couple quick words about Donna. So I know it's kind of strange with the whole online thing. Just a reflection is that I do notice that it seems like just a handful of people actually offer Donna. And just reflect, would you be offering Donna differently if you were in person? And, you know, and you may have to take some extra steps, go online or trust PayPal or Venmo or all that stuff. But, you know, just reflect on keeping that relationship alive, both to Sims and to the teacher. All right. Thank you for your consideration of Donna.